Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
October 14th, 2011, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An expert lineup of industry specialists join Bruce Norris to discuss current industry regulation, head-scratching legislation, and the opportunities emerging for savvy real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronkiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Real Wealth Networks, Fry Wiles Web and Branding, MVT Productions, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit isurvived2011.com for more details.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Gary Thomas. Gary is the current National Association of Realtors 2011 first vice president. He also is owner of Evergreen Realty in Villa Park, and he has served the industry in many roles, including being the president of the California Association of Realtors in 2001. Gary, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We just talked off the air a little bit. You began your career in 1975, and real estate in California actually did something unusual from 75 to 1980. It actually separated itself from the national price by doubling. And you were right in the middle of that, in probably the prime location where it probably happened the strongest, Orange County.
That's correct. It was great at that time in Orange County. It was very easy business at that time.
I remember reading something, and it was probably the California Association historical, you know, website information, and there was a comment in 1979, and it was sort of an astonishment that prices could accelerate at such a fast pace when interest rates were 13.5%, and then, you know, a year later, they got to something crazier than that. So what was interesting, and give me your opinion on this, but what I noticed happening was not only were prices escalating, which created a motivation. So you went to a new housing tract and decided not to buy something, and then you went there a month later, and it was up by $5,000 or $10,000. But the interest rates went up, too. And it's like you had a double whammy. If I don't make a decision, I'm not only going to pay more, I'm going to pay more per month.
That's absolutely correct. The one thing that did help us during the time when the interest rates ballooned up to like 18% was we had what was called in California the Wellenkamp decision, where, you know, a buyer of an existing home could take over the loan without having to qualify or without having getting permission from the lender. And so what we did is we would put a second trustee behind the first. And so the effective rate was much, much lower than the 18% that you would have to get if you went out and got a brand new first trustee.
What's interesting about that, I'm pretty familiar with the statistics of those years. 60% of transactions in California did not require a new loan in 81 through 83.
That's right.
If you didn't have that in place, you wouldn't have had a market.
That's correct. It would have been disastrous.
What's interesting about understanding the history of how we survive certain things. Because if you remember in the 80s when we had those crazy interest rates of up to whatever they were, high teens, we didn't have a price decline.
No.
And we have the tools at hand. And one of the things we have is most of our loans, let's say, are now government owned or controlled. And they could probably think about the solutions of the past, and I wonder, you know, this is something I wasn't going to necessarily bring up right now, but I think one of the things they could do would be create a loan program where the due on sale clause has a moratorium or literally doesn't exist, to where you could bring that forward into the future, and I think you'd end up having a much I think, a much safer real estate market going forward. And you'd also have, I think you'd have the ability to have people have nothing down right now without a big risk at all.
Yeah, I would agree with you. A lot of what's going on is finger pointing and thinking that everybody needs to have a giant down payment to be safe. And that's never been true. It's really, getting sound underwriting decisions and whether the people can afford to pay for the property at what they qualify for or not. And really, down payment doesn't make that much difference in that regard.
But, it seems like it should. That's the problem. It sounds like that could be a right decision. Sheila Bair said that somebody puts 20% down, they're more committed to the property, and it makes common sense until you look at a chart. And if you look at a chart for foreclosures over a course of decades, you find out that there's virtually no difference between a 20% down loan payment and a VA nothing down loan.
Correct. That's exactly right. That's what we keep pointing out is if you look at the VA loan program or the FHA loan program, where FHA has, very little down, both of those programs are working well.
Yeah, and I think we do a disservice, and it depends, I guess, what side you're on. And this is what's so frustrating to somebody on the outside, not with a political axe to grind, is that you just go, okay, could we make some common sense decisions here? We do not need to look at the years between 2002 and 2006 and say that that's going to replicate in the future. It isn't. All those decisions were made, probably the only time they'll ever be made, where a lender didn't care if they got paid back because they got rid of the paper. Prior to that, for decades, somebody actually cared that they got paid back, and whatever programs were in place there worked. So we don't need to, it's like we're trying to solve 2002 to 2006 with these programs, but that's not what we should be doing, especially in a time right now where people are really having a struggle with getting down payments because they're coming off of no gains on real estate.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. Or they've lost value in the stock market too. So, it's a combination of things, that puts them at a disadvantage by not having the kind of down payment that some within the administration or within government would think that they need to have.
Yeah, and I can understand the desire not to create another group of foreclosures, but what they're probably going to do is create a generation that's going to be a renter.
Correct.
And that probably is not as beneficial as they're thinking.
Well, no, it's not. And if you look at statistics, people that own homes generally do much better, both from a wealth standpoint as well as a way of living. I mean, their children have better test scores. They do better in school. They generally are less apt to have a criminal background. I mean, it's much better within communities to have stable home ownership than it is to have a renter class.
There was a recent Time magazine cover. It said, "Rethinking home ownership: Why owning a home may no longer make economic sense." And I got to tell you, that one drove me crazy.
Yeah, me too.
Prices, are down. It depends. In the county where you are, they're less damaged than Riverside. Riverside's down probably 60%. Interest rates are 4%. And somebody on a cover of a magazine is telling me that doesn't make sense to tie up a fixed house payment at a sub 4% interest rate for the next 30 years. That's an astonishing statement.
It really is, because, what's going to happen, as you and I both know, is a few years from now, people are going to look back and kick themselves for not having bought, even if they didn't absolutely time the bottom of the prices, because of the interest rates. The combination of both, once interest rates start to rise, trying to time it to the bottom is going to erase that difference in very, very quickly.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can go from 4 to 5. That sounds, okay, that's not a big deal. Well, that's a 25% rise.
Right.
That's a big discount in a price.
Exactly. And that's exactly right.
And this is... when you and I got in the business as separated by 5 years, happened to be the most volatile time. You probably in 75 saw an interest rate maybe 8, and by the time 80 came, it was double.
Right.
But this is bragging rights. You have a 4% mortgage rate 5-10 years from now. They're going to
be
people looking at that going, what?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to feel like a good decision.
Absolutely.
And you've got kids and grandkids. You got four. How many grandkids?
13.
14. Well, you got your own.
No, actually, no, 15. Excuse me.
That's bad. You can't keep track of them all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the things you mentioned, and when someone talks about on a cover magazine that it may no longer make economic sense, I really don't think that's why most people own. And I was thinking about asking you this question. If you went home tonight and you went home and it was a rental instead of a home you owned, what would you miss most?
Well, I wouldn't feel like doing anything to the property. I mean, you just don't have the pride of ownership. You wouldn't feel like, well, should I repaint? Should I recarpet? Should I fix this up, or should I repair that?
But you don't
have the same feeling.
Well, you'd also feel like you'd have to ask.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, you have to ask for permission to do anything.
Yeah, and see, that's what to me is special about America. Honestly, I think we shouldn't shortchange the feeling that comes from owning your own little square of the world. And I remember, you know, I've bought a lot of houses, but some of them stick out, and the first one sticks out for me because I was probably married 3 years. I was 20 years old. Bought a house, and, I mean, the toilets flushed the wrong way. The windows wouldn't open. But on Saturday morning after closing on Friday, I got to mow my grass on my house. And I never felt more manly.
Yeah, I understand.
Oddly enough.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Although we bought a brand new house, new construction, and with an FHA loan, and after we'd been married about 3 years, same experience. But because it was brand new, I then got to work building patio covers, putting the yard in, and the sprinkler system, and all the rest of the stuff. And I had a ball doing that. That house does stick out in my mind. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, there's more to it than the economic side of it. There really is.
Right.
Now, there was Ron Phillips, he's the current president.
Ron Phipps.
Ron Phipps, sorry. I said that. I wrote it down right and said it wrong. This is a quote of his. He said, "We're at a turning point, not just because our livelihood is at stake, but because home ownership, in an absolute sense, is at stake. The privileges we've had, our parents had, our grandparents had since World War II are being eroded, and our children face having those privileges denied to them." That's a pretty strong statement. How and why have we reached this turning point?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems like everything is coming together to try and discourage home ownership or try to make it much less accessible for most people. You know, all the way from the QRM, which is a qualified residential mortgage, where they are, you know, proposing that qualified residential mortgages, which would get the best rate, would have to have 20% down. Well, as you and I have discussed, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And we have been, you know, avidly going in and trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. As a matter of fact, we have a coalition together for that. And what's interesting are the members within the coalition. It's civil rights groups. It's consumer groups. It's lenders. It's, you know, it's everybody is looking at it. And what's interesting is the civil rights groups are looking at it and saying, wait a minute, you're going to disenfranchise a whole class of people if you go down this road.
Now, is that sensible housing policy? Is that
no?
Okay. No. Is that
Yes, it is. It's the that's correct.
Right. I've read that
yep.
document. Yeah.
And then you know, the mortgage interest deduction keeps coming up under attack. You know, talking about whether they want to try and trim it or reduce it, and you know, the millionaire tax. You could go on and on with all the things that have been that they're doing. I mean, they've just reduced the jumbo loan limits. Which not only affects the absolute top of the loan limit. Most people think, well, that only affects people in high-priced areas, where it went from 729,750 to 625,500. But it also affected almost every place in the country because it went from 115% of the price in a market area to 110. So, I mean, you know, it's going to affect everybody across the board, and people don't realize that. You know, you take all of those things into consideration, and, you know, it's just one thing after the other where it seems like they're trying to fix, as you said, the ills of 2002 to 2006 in 2011 and 12 when we don't need it now.
Right. And in most places, in Riverside, I'll just be very specific, it would be hard to find a house payment, a PITI house payment, that would be more than the rental equivalent.
Exactly.
It'd be tough to find.
Exactly.
And they probably have a prototype if they want to see what a nothing down loan program would perform like, would be the $8,000 rebate time frame.
That's right.
Because that would be pretty close to nothing down. Somebody paid it down and got it back.
Correct.
I doubt that they have a serious foreclosure problem with that pile of loans. I really doubt that.
No, I don't think they do either.
You know,
matter of fact, they don't have a serious problem ever since, you know, the whole downturn started. I mean, the newer loans are all performing well.
Yeah, I mean, we buy at the courthouse steps, and I guarantee you that 90% of what we see is 06, 07, some of
right.
it, 08. After
yeah.
that is, you know, it's a different...
The only ones that you'd probably find after that are some of them that where they recast the loan, went back in, tried to
sure.
save it, and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's still, you know, part of the problem of when they purchased and what they got into at the time.
You know, one of the things that I think, to me, it looks like we're going to have to give up some of the chips, you know, the goodies of real estate, because just in general, there's going to be this commission of fiscal responsibility that's going to say we've got to save whatever it is, $2.5 or $4 trillion from somewhere, and everyone's going to be asked to do their share. So has National Association of Realtors really thought about, okay, you know, we probably are going to have to, you know, give up some of this. Which one should we say is okay and which ones are not?
Well, at this point, we're saying, as far as a mortgage interest deduction?
Well, we got a $500,000, you know, free sale of a property. That seems pretty generous.
It does, unless it depends on...
unless I'm selling my
depends
house.
Depends on how you look at it. I mean, everything that you change within that has, you know, has a an effect that multiplies. For instance, let's take the mortgage interest deduction. If, in fact, you decide that you're going to, you know, one of the things that has been discussed is to take it away from vacation homes, okay,
right.
or second homes.
Right.
The problem when you do that is not only does it hurt the, you know, resale or sale, period, new or resale, of homes in vacation areas, but the ripple effect of what that does to the economy in those particular areas. You know, all the way from service sector jobs to anything you want to think of. You know, if people aren't buying in those areas, it affects everybody. And so it isn't just it affects that person that owns it. It affects a lot of people. And that's the unfortunate thing, is they don't think through the ramifications of doing anything like that fully. I mean, that would be counter to producing jobs. It would be just the opposite.
Yeah, unintended consequences. That's a big topic. And I sometimes shake my head when I see decisions made and I think they're could not have been anyone with a deep knowledge of our industry allowed to participate and have that decision emerge. So, for instance, the Dodd-Frank bill and the QRM yeah. and so forth.
Right.
How much participation is the industry allowed during the process? Because what I get the sense is we were handed this passed bill with almost the mandate to now go make this happen.
Typically what happens is when they've written a bill or a regulation, let's take a regulation, they then send it out for comment. And so we always make comments on anything that affects our industry or it affects homeownership or property rights, anything around that area. And so we will write on it, as will other interested groups, whether they take that into consideration or not when they go ahead and, you know, mandate the regulation. That's up to them. So, yes, we try and be engaged, but we can't always, you know, affect the outcome the way we would like to.
That is very frustrating to me.
Yes, it is, because they do it in a vacuum without consulting anybody, you know, with, you know, academic minds, so to speak, without any real-world experience, and come out with something and don't think through the unintended consequences.
There was a recent interview that we did with the president of MERS, and the reason I did it was because he was just in front of the Senate and Congress, and I read his deposition word for word with a yellow marker. When I watched the senators ask him questions, it was obvious no one had read it.
Oh, of course not.
That's very frustrating. So you create a bill without the input of an industry that could say, okay, we understand what the outcome you want is to have less foreclosures. Okay, this is the route to do that, not the route you're choosing. And I think that part of this is payback. You know, we really went through a time where real estate was going gangbusters. And I mean, I don't know how you felt in 2005 or six. Did you ever have a moment where you were just shaking your head going, how is this continue? Yeah.
Of course we did.
Yeah. I mean,
we've been down that road before, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, that's, I think this is part, overreaction.
Yeah, it
to that.
It is.
And probably misdirected too, because that's one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to be asked to go back and talk in front of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA about dealing with the situation and how, you know, getting rid of the homes. And one of the things that would be frustrating to me is if they decided to bulk sell them to hedge funds.
Oh, I agree.
I would find that very frustrating, since I feel like they were a great participant in making this all happen in the first place. Do you recall, and I mean, it's interesting, Orange County was sort of the hotbed of subprime, but did you know what a mortgage-backed security was and a collateralized debt obligation was in 2005 and 2006? Because I didn't.
No. I had
no idea how that stuff was being funded and how it was being spread around until 07, 08 maybe. And then when you read it, you're going, what? You know, how could we do that? You know, and that's, I think that was part of it, is that we had an industry that definitely was benefiting by the new rules, but I don't know that we realized the unintended consequences of what's going to happen afterwards. And that's what we're dealing with, unfortunately. We have only about a minute left. What's one of the most important agendas for this coming year for National Association of Realtors?
Well, it's, you know, trying to make sure that we get back to a healthy housing market and try and get some reasonableness back into government in how they're dealing with it. And if we could do that, it'd be a home run.
Okay. Well, I know you have a lot of other pieces of the industry wanting to have that too. I mean, one of the questions I asked from the president of the Appraisal Institute is, how do you like to have gone to sleep in 2006 and wake up in 2011 as an appraiser? You know, slightly different job.
Yeah, a lot different.
Yeah.
For darn sure. Yeah.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We're looking very forward to having you October 14th as part of our panel, and we'll be discussing solutions to these problems.
Great. I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you. Gary Thomas has been with us with Evergreen Realty. Thank you very much.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2011. Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Conaway & Conaway, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan & Clark Partners LLC, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Pacific Sunrise Mortgage, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Raven Paul & Company, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, Tony Alvarez, and Weston South Coast Plaza. Visit isurvived2011.com for more details.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.